Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Greetings, friends. We are here with New York Times bestselling author Emma Straub. She's written four books and one short story, Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures, Vacationers, Modern Lovers, Other People We Married, and most recently, All Adults Here, which was just released in paperback and is being developed for TV. Very exciting. Ms. Straub also owns a bookstore with her husband called Books Are Magic. Thank you for being with us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So as an erstwhile bookseller, I can say that there are some books that have a really narrow appeal to folks, but all of your books seem like they could be recommended to just about anybody. Can you tell me a little bit about how the idea for All Adults Here came about?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me and thank you for saying that about my books. So the idea for All Adults Here, the original idea was that I wanted to write a book about cheese and I wanted it to be like a rom-com. I wanted to write like a rom-com about cheese. And that is not what happened, but that's where it started, which just goes to show you that, you know, you never really know. Like I really wanted to go into this book being like, you know, I was just imagining something very sexy, something with, I don't know. But then it ended up being a book that's like really a lot about like parental mistakes and like, you know, these like deep family problems and miscommunication and misunderstanding. There is still goat cheese in the book and there are still some sex scenes, but it is, yeah, it just goes to show you that, you know, your subconscious always knows what really needs to happen and that it's not necessarily what you planned.
Absolutely. I live in Oregon now, but I'm originally from Wisconsin. And I have to say the idea of a rom-com with cheese, it just appeals to my soul.
Yeah. Where in Wisconsin are you from, if I may?
Just south of Madison.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
I went to grad school in Madison and my whole family is from Milwaukee. So.
Oh, wonderful. You even say Milwaukee the right way. I don't, I'm told. But. But, you know, on the topic, you know, of how this book sort of veered from the romantic comedy, a lot of your books, and this one specifically, deal with some dark topics. This one has discussion of abortion, infidelity, grief, and predatory behavior. But your characters manage all of it with grace and dignity and humor. What's the process that you have for approaching these weightier subjects with such a light touch? Because you really... you bring so much light to them.
Oh, thanks. You know, it's funny, but maybe it's not funny at all. It's just sort of actual like human aging and what happens. But it's always been true in my books that there's dark stuff that happens. Like in my first novel, there is a suicide very early in the book, and there's quite a lot of death actually in that one, but, and substance abuse, there's a lot of stuff that happens in that book that I think that if I was writing it now, I would be more, not more hesitant, but just sort of more aware of the reading experience. And I don't know, I think about with each book, I think about what's in it more in terms of how it's going to affect the readers and my responsibility really to readers who may have experienced something like it in their lives. It is especially true, I think, for when I write about people who have, you know, marginalized identities that I do not. Like there's a trans character in this book who's a kid. And I mean, you know, in terms of the character in relation to the rest of the plot, it's
you know, it's a fairly small part of the whole, but I thought about that character the most, and it mattered to me the most to try to do it right.
That was actually one of my other questions I had, because all the characters in this book are, in All Adults Here, are in a state of transformation. You know, Porter is transitioning into parenthood. Her mother, Astrid, is transitioning into being open about a new relationship that she has with a woman. Her Cecilia's father, Nikki, is sort of transitioning into more of an active state of parenthood. Mm-hmm. But August Sullivan is the one who's making like the real big transition into Robin. And I thought you handled that very well. I'm not a trans person, so I can't speak to that. But I was wondering what informed your portrayal of Robin, and how did you make sure that the topic was handled with sensitivity and authenticity?
Well, you know, I think as a parent of young children here in Brooklyn, New York, I know a lot of kids, you know, I know a lot of trans kids and non-binary kids. My eldest child, who's now 7, has told us since he was 3 that he didn't have a gender. And, you know, it's a conversation that changes, and, you know, it's evolving, which I appreciate, right? Like it's something that he is thinking about, and sometimes thinks about one way and sometimes thinks about another way. But there are so many kids. There are so many kids who I know who are under 10 who understand these things about themselves and who have parents who are supportive of them and encourage them and, you know, just love them and support them the way you would want your parent to love and support any part of you. So part of it is that, you know, that I just think that, you know, how like some people think, oh, there are no gay people in my family. And it's like, okay, you just go with that, right? If you think that's true. But you know, some people say, oh, I don't know any trans people. And it's like, well, that's probably not true either. That's probably not true. But in terms of wanting to do it right, I showed it to some trans friends to read, you know, just obviously just to make sure that I wasn't saying something wrong. Not that, you know, one or two of my trans friends can like, you know, be at the voice of all trans people. But I did ask a couple of people to read for that purpose specifically. And then I mean, in terms of like a young teenager thinking about coming out, I watched a lot of videos on like Tumblr. I watched so many, I mean, God, there is enough like video footage of kids talking about their identity on the internet that you could just cry all day long. I mean, in a like happy, supportive, proud sort of way.
Yeah, that makes me so happy. And the setting that All Adults Here takes place in is a fairly small town. And usually the idea I think that we have of small towns is that they are closed-minded and judgmental, but that isn't the case. It feels like your portrayal is both a love letter and an indictment of small towns a bit, because there isn't really any confidentiality involved, but the community is really still very tight knit and supportive of one another.
Yeah. Well, I think that the way that I see just personally sort of things progressing in small towns and in big cities is really generationally, you know, where like sometimes I remember a couple of years ago, it was my mother's
75th birthday, and you know, my parents are open-minded, liberal people who have always had queer friends, you know, trans people in their orbit. But I spent like the whole evening like explaining the difference between gender and sexuality. Not that I'm some like gender studies PhD, you know, like I'm just a person who reads books and pays attention and knows people and stuff. But I think that for, you know, like my parents' generation, maybe even sort of Gen X up, I think that just the way that people talk about gender and sexuality has changed enormously, enormously. And I, you know, my husband and I own a bookstore, and the bookstore is mostly staffed by people in their 20s, which has been amazing for me as a human, because it means that I feel like I have access to just to information about how young people see the world and see mm-hmm. themselves that I would not have otherwise. And certainly it's a self-selecting group, you know, it's yeah. people who work at a bookstore, but I feel really, really lucky that I'm not just surrounded by people who are exactly my own age. You know, I could very easily have, you know, never sort of made friends or really gotten to know people who were 20 years younger than I am, you know, because it's not like they're not like my kids' age, you know, it's really in the middle. But I think that in an indirect way really affected this book too, because it helped me understand sort of what's happening, and it's good. What is happening is good. Like there is just the amount of like acceptance and fluidity is amazing.
It really does make me very happy. And I agree with you. I think being surrounded by people that are younger people or people with different experiences just creates a natural evolution in your thought pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't even have to really think about it. You just relate to people on a human level. Yeah. And it changes the way that you see the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, I mean, I'm all for that. More of that, please.
Yeah.
So I'm a woman in her late 30s. And first of all, I want to say thank you so much for having Astrid tell Porter that she still had plenty of time to have babies. I don't think anybody that is interested in having children when they hit their late 30s, most people tell them the opposite of that. I am expecting my first child, very excited about it.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And so the character of Porter really resonated with me in a lot of different ways. I loved her evolution into parenthood. I loved her fallibility and her strength. Do you feel that parenthood and specifically feminism and parenthood impacted what you wrote and how you write it?
Yeah. I mean, I you know, I as I was saying earlier that like, you know, there are things that I wrote about earlier in my career, and I am proud of all of my books, don't get me wrong, but there's in my first novel the main character has children, and I wrote this scene of her pregnant, and you know, that was about 5 or 6 years before I had my first child, and it is, yeah, I mean, I think that being a parent and being, you know, just a woman in this body, on this planet informs everything. You know, I think that it is absolutely not true, of course, that you need to be a parent in order to write anything. But for me, my writing got better when I had children. I mean, it got harder to do for sure.
but it got better. I think just when you have a child, just every thing you understand about the world changes. Just the way that you relate to everything in your environment changes. And I think that there aren't that many things in life that like bifurcate your experience so entirely. Like you can get married, you can get a divorce, you know, you can move to the, you know, to a remote island, you can move back. Like you can, there are so many things that you can do and undo and change. But having a kid is really not one of those, you know, it really, whatever happens afterwards, you are changed. You are changed. And I think for me, you know, as a person who, this is going to sound like a diss on myself, but as a person who lives like a very small, very local life, like I live in the same place I grew up. My parents are my best friends and they live like three blocks away, you know, that kind of thing, you know, like I still know people I went to elementary school with and, you know, yada, yada. It was really amazing to have my world really change and to have my, I don't know. It's like, I got new eyeballs and a new brain, which was welcome.
Yeah. I imagine that really does enrich your experience of writing from different perspectives, because you are seeing things from vastly different perspectives now.
Yeah.
Too. And again, you know, like you said, it doesn't mean that you need to be a parent, or that people that haven't entered parenthood are missing some, you know, vital component, but it is a world shift for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, God knows, like, I think I have lots of friends who have no interest in having children, and thank God, like, I mean, you know, I mean, to talk about feminism, you know, like to be a woman who has no interest in having children, like, thank God that we're getting to a place where women can do that and not have people like react in horror. Although I think they still do. I think they still do. I mean, like, all of my friends who are, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, who don't have children and don't want them, like, people ask them about that shit all the time. And it's ridiculous. Like, yeah. The idea that like all women should want to have children is absurd. And, you know, how previous generations ended up with a whole lot of really, really miserable parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a private matter too. You know, people, I think, don't respect that as much, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But, you know, going, you know, still along the lines of parenthood, I loved Wendy. I loved Wendy. You get such a dynamic understanding of her, because you see her from the outside, from so many people's perspectives first, and then you see how she feels about herself within the family dynamic, and as kind of the one of the main outsiders coming into this group. But there was a scene in particular that made me laugh so hard, and I felt such a connection to it, when she talks about having earplugs in, you know, earplugs all around the house, so she can put them in and block out the sound of her twins screaming in roughhousing and have a little bit of mental quiet. I don't, you know, my child's not born yet, but I do have a really noisy dog. And so sometimes I will resort to similar things. I was just wondering, is that something you pulled from your real life?
I would say that my children have not, you know, have not appeared directly in my work. Although I think that having them has informed my work immensely. But I will say that people who know my children and have read this book have said, oh, there they are. I have two very, very, very loud children. And there is screaming all day. It's not always angry, you know, they're not always fighting. But even just like base level, like building Legos, come look at this Batman, yada, yada. Like even just that, like, or can I have some fizzy water? Like any sentence is shrieked at a very high volume.
They have a lot of joie de vivre.
They really do. They really do. And that is what I tell myself. That is what I tell myself to you know, that like other people might have like quiet, perfectly behaved children, but they're robots. You know, my children are wild and fabulous.
That's wonderful. Well, I imagine that the development of all adults here at TV is taking up kind of a considerable amount of your attention, but are you working on anything else right now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, so the TV thing is funny because like, as a novelist, I'm so used to the way things work where like I write a book, I turn it in, my editor and I work on it together, and then it goes to the copy editor, and then it goes, you know, and it's like one step and then another step and then another step. It's all very linear and predictable. Whereas the TV stuff is just wild. I mean, it's a woman named Sarah Hayward and I are co-writing it, and there are just so many steps and it takes so long. So, you know, like we're right now, it takes up almost no time because so much of the time is just like waiting for someone to give us notes. So I have actually just finished my first draft of my new book, of a new novel. And I just got some notes back from my editor. So we are in business. I mean, it is wild. I mean, during the pandemic, the first part of the pandemic, I didn't work at all because I couldn't work at all because my husband was at the bookstore like 10 or 12 hours a day, making sure it was still a thing that worked. And so I was home with, you know, my aforementioned very loud children, you know, by myself 12 hours a day for 6 months or so. And so work wasn't even like, it wasn't even on the menu. Like there was just no possibility of any work happening until the fall when we were able to have both some childcare and some in-person school. And so I didn't start writing until October. And it just feels miraculous to me that I wrote anything.
I'm very much in awe of that. Yes. We are coming to the end of our time together, but I just wanted to tell you, I really did truly love All Adults Here. I thought it was a fantastic book. I actually read it twice.
Oh,
once just because I wanted to just really enjoy it, you know, without thinking critically about it or trying to think about ways to talk with you about it. And the second time to come up with some ideas for discussion. And it is just one of those things that I feel like you could return to again and again, because there's so much comfort in it. And especially after a year of so much darkness. Yeah. So thank you for bringing some light into the world.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. When are you due, if I may ask?
July 2nd.
Oh my gosh. It's coming up. It's coming up.
Oh yeah. She's getting more and more active by the day.
Oh, that's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. I hope you enjoy this last part of that, of this part, which is a part all on its own, you know?
Yeah.
It's
I imagine I'll enjoy parts of the last part.
Yeah, but you know, it's I don't know, that like that last sort of like ocean liner phase, you know, when like it's really, it starts to be hard to turn, you know, that kind of thing. That's amazing. You know, it's an amazing thing that bodies can do. It's just wild.
It's very sci-fi.
Yeah. Well, congratulations in advance.
Thank you. That was Emma Straub, and we are talking about her book, All Adults Here, which just came out in paperback, as I said, and is being developed for TV. Thank you.
Of course. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.